This sauce originated from a tradition of the Prophet that said, my community will never agree on an error. Now, while that tradition of the Prophet was referring to the Ummah, the community in general, as I said, over time it came to be understood as the ulama, as in speaking for the community, the representatives of the community, because they were the knowledgeable ones. They knew the religious sources. Concern for justice led to the development of other subsidiary legal principles. Among them were equity, which permits exceptions to a strict or literal legal reasoning in favor of public interest, another source, public interest or human welfare, the general welfare, assuring a flexibility that enabled judges to arrive at just and equitable decisions. Now, Shi'i Muslims have a somewhat different set of legal sources. And most importantly, within this context, we need to note that they accept, yes, the Quran and the Sunnah, but also their own collections of the traditions of Ali and his successors as Imam. Remember in Shi'ism, the importance of Ali and the Imams, whom they regard as supreme authorities and legal interpreters. Now, while there is a unity, an overall unity within Islamic law, it's important to note there's also a diversity. Islamic law is both a source of unity as well as difference and diversity. While the four schools of law agree in their essentials, they differ in a number of particulars, reflecting the role of individual reasoning and social custom. There'll be differences about the qualifications in terms of who you can marry, or areas that have to do with the maintenance of a wife, how much maintenance and for how long. This will vary from school to school. Individual jurists differed in their interpretation of texts. They, after all, were using their human reason, their personal opinions, their notions of equity and public welfare. So too, the diverse social backgrounds and cultural context of legal scholars. The technical term for legal scholars here is a faqih, the plural, a fuqaha, to refer to the jurist or the legal scholar. That also affected their judgments and informed their interpretations. What was their social context? What was the cultural context? Thus, law schools differed about the grounds on which a woman could sue for divorce or an amount to be paid for maintenance. The differences in local customs of the more cosmopolitan and class-conscious city of Kufa, a Hanafi center, versus the more conservative Medina, where the Maliki law school developed, can be seen in the varying regulations of these law schools. A similar diversity is illustrated by the official legal opinions or interpretations, what are called fatwas. A fatwa is a legal opinion rendered by an expert, a consultant, a mufti. And we see these terms emerging more in our media. The mufti is one who advises judges and advises litigants. It's a bit like in a law case today where either the plaintiff, the defendant, might go to a prominent legal scholar at a major law school to get an opinion and then bring that to court and use that before the court. We see these differences among muftis or legal scholars, and differences in, therefore, in their fatwas in recent times, when muftis have provided contrasting opinions or fatwas in the Salman Rushdie case, for example, and in the Gulf War of 1991. The Ayatollah Khomeini's fatwa found Salman Rushdie, the author of the Satanic Verses, guilty of blasphemy, and he was condemned to death. That resulted, as many of you will recall, in his going into hiding. Now, other muftis, while deploring the book, called for his trial by Islamic law, and so that difference in approach. In the Gulf War, muftis' opinions varied in providing, on the one hand, supporting positions for Iraq, or on the other, support for the U.S.-led Armada that included Arab and Muslim countries, like Egypt and Saudi Arabia. Similar differences of opinion have been seen more recently regarding the issue of suicide bombing and martyrdom, most particularly in Palestine, Israel today, and in that conflict.